Well, now we find ourselves in a situation where this model that we had all mapped out, beginning, as you say often, pear-shaped, it's no longer, these offsets are no longer holding. Now, what we've got, let's talk about the real problem of having one of these sides of, one of the legs of this equation fall apart. What does that actually do to the financial system when the correlation, the negative correlation, no longer holds in its original form? What are the consequences potentially?
Oh, I mean the fallout is just ridiculous. When we actually start pulling holes, like if we say, right, we've structured all these transactions, and these transactions go around in lots of different directions. So if I was doing, for instance, a currency swap, and we've got the 30 biggest banks out there, I can swap from the first bank as me. I would say go to Citibank and do a dollar for sterling swap. And then from there, I would go to Nomura and do a dollar to yen swap. And then from there, go to Deutsche Bank and do a yen to euro swap. And then from then into Hong Kong Bank, HSBC, and do Hong Kong dollar swap, and so on and so on and so on. And just get this enormous circle, and then eventually square that circle by coming back home with the Hong Kong dollar to sterling. I've got all those different exposures out there. Now, my net position is that I'm making money for free now, having netted everything off, not just umbrella ice cream, but actually I've gone through a circle of products, a circle of different assets, in this case, currencies. I've gone out and taken exposure to 9 different currencies and come back home to roost. If one of those pops in the middle, it's bad enough. If just one of those pops in the middle, now what I would ordinarily do if one of those pops in the middle just for me with a counterparty, I would rush out and try to find somebody else to do the same shape trade with, the same two currencies, the same nominal, and I'd be ringing around other banks trying to get that position.
Just to stabilize the table, because one of the legs just got shortened. And so what we've got here, let's say you got a three-legged table, and all of a sudden one of the legs just gets shortened by a couple of inches. Now all of a sudden your whole platform or your whole level has been tilted. In other words, if one leg gets shorter than the other two, you've got a problem. Now, what happens when the whole thing starts breaking down and nobody even knows how much is being lost in this equation? So let's talk about that.
Right. Well, okay. The thing is that what we would do is replace that leg ordinarily. However, with the subprime situation, all the subprimes off, it's all collapsed. There's none of it good at all. Nobody wants the asset. So any contracts which we've agreed on that asset, I can't replace the leg. So that was a leg made out of a unique material, and that material's not in stock anymore. I can't replace it. I can't get an identical match anymore, Daryl. We can't go out and get anybody to do us a contract on subprime.
So the only thing you can replace it with is actual cash. And what that is covering the risk part of that asset has to be covered with a cash asset.
Well, of course, now we've got to try. This is when the models don't work, Daryl. Now we've got to try and balance these 9 currency ones that I did previously. If you imagine all of a sudden we take a piece out of the middle, I've got all these exposures going over there, all those exposures going over there, and they no longer net out to zero or a low number. Now I'm probably adding both sides. So I've gone from $1 on my capital requirement to maybe $150 on the 100 capital requirement that I've got to hold. I mean, it's just gone absolutely crazy. And these guys...
And here's the interesting thing, Mohammed. When Northern Rock went belly up, and it went belly up for a reason, they took that particular institution out so they could feed into the system all the counterparty's risk and pay it off with taxpayer money. Now, interesting, I want this to be understood by people. When that money flowed out of that enterprise into these counterparties, those counterparties that received the money, were they going on the hook for repayment of the money that was given to them through Northern Rock? In other words, there was a huge infusion of 25 billion pounds. Ladies and gentlemen, that's $50 or $60 billion that was injected into the counterparty banks that did business with Northern Rock. Now, are those banks that received that funds from Northern Rock, are they also required to place that on their books as a liability now?
No.
The repayment of that money?
No, because, of course, what was happening was that the Northern Rock owed those people all of that money under the contractual agreements and under their netting agreements. Simply by forcing Northern Rock, by choosing Northern Rock and getting them to pay out to all the counterparties there, everybody who had Northern Rock going bad on their books went from having a series of things that weren't adding up, a series of numbers that weren't adding up. At least now, some cash came in that I could actually use against, because I can, under the new regime, of course, Darrell, cash deposits are also classed as Tier 1 capital without limit. So the cash coming in means that although I've got legs missing and going short off my other tables, I've got some cash coming in the other side that I can hold against my insolvency ratios. So
because it was coming from taxpayer money, it was actually a free gift to the banks that the taxpayer ultimately is going to pay for, either through inflation or through direct payment. So that was basically a theft of £25 billion from the British public.
Of tax. We will pay for that through increased taxation. Government, Gordon Brown and his friend Darling, will have to increase the levels of taxation in the UK to recover that extra £25 billion that's supposed to be being spent on education, healthcare, and other public services. Absolutely.
To be given to banks that were stealing the entire time.
That are so massively leveraged. You know that the statistic you're quoting there, Darrell, of the half a quadrillion dollars, I'm just going to give people a little bit of an important breakdown here. When we're buying gold, buying and selling gold, for instance, we do that on the spot markets. It's also possible to buy and sell gold also on the futures markets, as you're well aware, Darrell, with buying traded futures and options contracts. That gives an idea of the open interest. We tend to think we know, oh, look, there's this many futures been bought and sold and this many options been bought and sold. We know how much business is being done on gold. So we might be buying and selling gold on the basis of that. From the BIS website, I downloaded a series of reports today, and I've done a set of calculations and some additions and put some numbers together, Darrell. The total amount of OTC contracts as FX contracts or commodity link contracts in gold, do you know what the total amount of nominal value of gold is actually being traded outside of the markets and outside of public scrutiny? It's $565 billion, Darrell.
That's outside of what we see now. If delivery was demanded on that amount of gold, there wouldn't be enough gold to be delivered at these prices.
There's more. This is more than the amount of gold in the world, and these banks are secretly trading and making money on the back of gold and trading in gold, but in a way that, because it's OTC, it's strictly between you and me, or you and your counterparty, or me and my counterparty. This isn't on any exchanges. Nobody in the world is aware that this level of gold is actually being traded in, and this is by professional financial institutions. They have gone so big into gold that right now their open interest on OTC contracts is $565 billion.
Now, what is the reason they're moving into gold other than the fact that paper currency has no quality? Is it because they know the true price of actual physical gold is astronomically and multiplied higher than it presently is? I mean, we're talking for dollars, $780. But if you want to try to divide gold into the amount of debt that is actually outstanding in the world, it would actually, the calculation I read, and it might be wrong, sits at about $30,000 an ounce.
I just gave that as an example so that people could understand that these over-the-counter contracts, how big the business is. We're getting to real big numbers now, Darrell. FX contracts, foreign exchange contracts, which include outright forwards and FX swaps and currency swaps, the total value of and FX options. These are all OTC contracts. They're different types of foreign exchanges. We could do it as a swap. We could do it as an over-the-counter option trade between us, and we could also do it as a forward. The total value is $48.7 billion.
That's $480 trillion.
Yep. And the interest rate, when we look at interest rate contracts, the second type there, we've got interest rate swaps, forward rate agreements, and total IR swaps. They come in at $346 billion. And of those, Darrell, what's really scary of the interest rate swaps and the foreign exchange swaps, 32% of all the interest rate swaps are, 33% rather, are US dollar denominated. So basically, 33% of that nominal value, somebody somewhere is paying and somebody somewhere is receiving on the basis of the Fed's rate going up and down. And 33% of that, so like more than $100 million. And in the same way, on the foreign exchange contracts, even scarier, 83% of them have a dollar leg.
So 83%.
83% of the contracts, one of the legs is a dollar leg. 83%.
Oh. So what we're looking at here for the novice who's trying to become educated on how, because I'll tell you something, this particular file goes way beyond where we were with the last one, Muhammad, and people are going to be scratching their heads with this. Let's boil it down to so that people can understand this. This system is melting down now. There's a cascading effect happening as we sit, as we speak, as you listen, ladies and gentlemen, to this file. It cannot be reversed because no one can unwind the negative correlated relationships without taking something from someplace else.
Yeah. You've got to unwind the whole package because before we could repair a leg. If one subprime contract went bad, because it was just one, we could go to the market and find another similar shape thing to put in the middle. Now, not because all subprimes wiped out, we can't replace it. So the whole thing is shot up. And then all the packages which include that are shot up. And anybody who sold on part of that package or sold on, there's something known as a credit default swap, sold on the credit risk of that package, it's just blown up everywhere and there's no replacement. It can't be fixed. It's unfixable. This is Humpty Dumpty. He's fallen off the wall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. You can't fix this.
That's right. And this is what I've tried to explain. Now, basically, what they are trying to do is to plug the evident holes, the holes that the societies are starting to see with temporary infusions of money. And you'll notice, if you've been watching, the infusions of cash that seem to do nothing to the overall picture in the finances are enormous. We're talking $41 billion, 20, 50 billion. Well, the one for Northern Rock, $50 billion with a B. So that between the two of those, that's $100 billion. That's a tenth of $1 trillion, and it did nothing to stop this cascading. My point being is that basically all they're doing is playing for time to get their ducks in a row so that when the fan and the manure come together, they've got an infrastructure together to repress their societies in the ensuing nightmare, because there is going to be messes everywhere. This makes 1930, Muhammad, look like a day in the park.
Well, the good news is for people out there is that we, compared to them, we have much, much higher production levels, but that doesn't make up for the fact that the banks, so many banks are clearly insolvent and very seriously insolvent. When you think, Darrell, that $50 billion injection, right, if you need, when I add up the total amount of derivative contracts here, as published by the BIS themselves in their own statistics, that $50 billion, we have here a number which is in millions of dollars, 455,047,418 millions, coming at the end of it.
That 47 in the middle is where the 50 billion goes. It's still out by a factor of 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000. It's out by a factor of 10,000 on the amount of nominal exposure out there on these OTC contracts. This 50 billion, it needs to be 10,000 times larger to actually start having an impact on the amount of nominal.
So basically what they're doing right now is, because the confidence has not completely eroded in fiat currency, is that they just keep injecting this fiat currency as quickly and as often as possible to buy themselves another day before this whole thing just finally goes, as you've used the term, pear-shaped, until it goes completely like a rocket shot into the ground. And I don't see any way of avoiding this. People right now, I mean, there is no way of avoiding it because it can't be fixed. It's kind of like the motor that in your car, when you lift the hood up, it's a pile of melted metal. You can't undo the melt. The melt is done, and so basically what you've got is nothing there. You've got nothing that will ever run again. This can't be fixed, Mohammed. Can't be fixed.
And what they're telling people is that, you know, it's dirty spark plugs. We'll put some clean spark plugs in and everything will be working well. They are lying to the general public, and they're lying wholesale about the enormity of this problem. And what they created with the new capital accord, which was meant to put conservatism in there, was meant to regulate banks, the capital, and make sure that the banks didn't run off creating money wholesale out of nowhere. It did the opposite. It's given them a license to do it in a way which they never previously had access to. Never could have done this previously. It's just...
Let's ask this question out into the ether if we can. Could this have been by design? I believe that they did these things by design. And you've pointed out it does appear to be by design, but not on the times frame that they were planning. In other words, in your view, they were always interested in imploding the financial structure to their own benefit. But they weren't planning on doing it now. They had a date for this. They had a time frame for this. And somehow the simple greed that they injected into the system actually superseded their time period. And they're actually being faced with this before they're ready to actually do it.
Well, that's right. They clearly, you know, if we go off the famous forgery of the protocols, it does say that, you know, one of the things in the overall grand plan was that they were going to cause a global economic meltdown. What we actually have here is a global banking meltdown, which is not what they wanted to happen, and why they're actually bailing the banks out with taxpayers' money, because they need the banks to be there when everything else collapses so that they can mop up, which is what they always do. Here, the banks have actually collapsed, and they're not in a position to be able to buy anything. They're not even in a position to borrow or lend off each other. So when you add on to that the freaky dollar situation, the fact that the subprimes collapsed, they've lost controls all over the place. The only thing they've got left is confidence, and the only way they can keep confidence there is by keep lying to the public. They've got to keep telling them more lies, telling them it's being resolved, telling them life is a bed of roses with the dollar. Oh, don't worry about these insolvency calculations. We'll be on top of it all fairly soon. It's all lies from start to end.
So what does this mean for the Joe Schmo down the street and for you and me? And what I think it means is this: you need to take the monies that you have in your purview, in your surroundings, in your world, and begin to put it to work for you into hard assets. And whether that means bags of food or you know, something that's going to help serve you in a fiat currency-less world. Because very soon, that money that you can use today will not be usable, or it will be diminished by a factor so dramatic that it'll be virtually worthless. My point being is that in order to rightfully serve the listening public here that I have, that rely on my take on things, What they really need to do here is start taking action, Mohammed. This is not something you can just make believe is not happening. It is happening, and it is going to get so much worse. I have a time frame for this, in January or February of next year, which is a three-month window, things are going to start cascading from every, and I think it's going to happen because we have several new legs under the table being chopped even shorter that are going to burst more of these contracts, and they are parts of the arms that are coming off. There's a new set of them, bigger than the last, ready to go up in smoke here, which is going to even make this thing worse. And they've never even figured out how to stop the first mess. So in other words, you're going to add another. It's like adding a can of gasoline to a chemical fire, and it's just going to be more explosion. I think I see this. What do you see?
Well, I think you've raised one of the critical points here. You've just answered a question that a lot of people out there are wondering. You know, why at a time when the dollar is collapsing, is the Fed announcing that it's going to lower interest rates? And everybody's seeing that as good news. The answer is these fixed rate mortgages that people have had. And what they're trying to do is manage how many people can afford their mortgages, Daryl. So they're lowering the interest rates so that when these fixed rates come to an end, these people will continue to be able to service their mortgages. If they can't service their mortgages, more and more and more of this paper, which is not subprime, even prime paper, will continue to explode and melt down. And the contagion coming out of the housing market will increase and increase. It's been recognized here in the UK because the UK has the same thing, fixed rate mortgages, which are now coming to an end in the middle.
No, adjustable rate mortgages.
Yeah,
you mean?
Well,
you said fixed. You mean adjustable rate?
These are adjustable, but these are actually fixed, artificially fixed, a low for 5 years, for the first 5 years.
Yeah, so that's what that's called, an ARM or an adjustable rate mortgage, which actually has a maturity point where it goes up to a different rate. It's a teaser rate, if you will.
And we in the UK we call that a fixed rate because it's fixed for the first 5 years before becoming adjustable. So
fixed for the entire term of your loan, which is 20 years usually. And the adjustable rate is one that's only fixed for a period in the beginning of your loan payment period. So we have to actually make apples and oranges here, like the left side, right side of my ledger, you know.
Okay, that's the state side. In the UK, we normally have variable or floating rate mortgages, and the banks occasionally, as a teaser and an appetizer to get people to borrow, they actually offer them a guaranteed fixed rate and a low rate as well for up to 5 years. And then that rate has been maybe 2% below the current base rate. So what's going to happen is when they get to the end of that low fixed rate at the beginning, it's a similar idea to the US, but it works a different way. When they get to the end of that period, they're going to have a 2% hike in the cost of their monthly payments. So
now let's talk a little bit also here. See, this is even if they're able to stave off the cascading of the housing market, what is happening in the real world in real time is that other asset classes and other needs that we have, and we talked a little bit about the inflation figures earlier in a private call. It doesn't matter if they save that leg. People cannot afford the doubling of wheat and flour for their bread. They can't. It's double in price. The milk has gone up in France 30% in 2 months. We're talking about an increase in milk, cheese, bread, cereal, oil, gas, everything. Look at we're testing $100 a barrel on oil. We're testing all kinds of inflation rates on products outside of housing that even if they save the leg of the mortgage market for an additional 2, 3, 5 months, it's the rest of the costs that people pay that is going to forbid them from paying their mortgage. They eat first. I mean, you can't be paying your house and not have food on the table.
My point being is that
no matter how you look at this, they're robbing Peter to pay Paul right now, and that's not going to work because the rest of the commodity world, like wheat and flour and bread and all that stuff, is going astronomical on us, and that's going to stop people from paying their mortgages just as well as the rest of it.
Well, as you raised in a private conversation we had earlier, Darrell, the powers that be have changed the way in which they've calculated the rate of inflation many different times. And what they're doing is they're removing things which are going up enormously, such as housing and such as oil not being included in the calculation now, so that when we say the inflation's still under control, that's because we've taken two of the highest growers in terms of pricing, price index, have been removed from the indexes. And then we bring in things which, as you pointed out, very important for people at home to understand this. Certain products like technology actually get cheaper to produce. And as a result, the apparent cost is going down. So they put those in the rate of inflation and say, hey, look, mobile phones or computers or other types of technology, they're actually coming down in price. So actually, not only is inflation under control, but some things are even getting cheaper.
Which is a farce. It's a fraud. It's just a lie. It's a basic lie. And everybody who goes to the grocery store or goes to fill up their car or goes to do anything today realizes that this is just a big fraud. Geez, Mohammed, you know, when I get on this, you know, on this subject and try to apportion responsibility to this, it goes back to the same people, and we have to be clear about who to blame. Now, there are people at the top of this structure who work behind the scenes of all these banks and all of these rating agencies and all of these accounting systems and all of these central banks that come from the same clique, the same club, the same group. They may not be dancing on the same dance card, but ultimately they do take their orders from the same kind of controllers, if you will. And these people have to be identified, and we have to begin to say to the world, this is how we got here, and this is where it happened, and who did it to us.
Oh, I think when we look at, you know, who are the culprits, we'll find the usual suspects. One of the things, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, Darrell, about many banks being independently owned, they're publicly quoted companies, things like Barclays and Lloyds, they're not privately owned, they're public companies. The average man in the street has got shares in them. When the people at the Bank for International Settlements at Basel in Switzerland put together this new regulatory regime, these publicly quoted companies have been forced to go along with the regime that's been enforced upon them by a small circle of central bankers. The Bank for International Settlements in Basel is the central banker's bank. So in reality, there's probably 40 or 50 shareholders who are the central banks of the world. And anybody who knows the history of the fractional reserve banking system knows that all of that leads us to the same group of Zionist-supporting Jews who have used and manipulated the monetary systems of the United Kingdom and the United States and the rest of the world for literally hundreds of years.
And there's no way around it. The research points to it. The facts point to it. And I'd like to ask you to maybe clarify one other point here, Mohammed. They don't teach this anywhere. And even when I was, you know, studying my finance courses, of course, I told you a little story about my professor coming in from Coopers and Lybrand. He was a vice president down on Wall Street. And the guy never taught me this. Now, this is what he should have been teaching me. Instead, what he was teaching me is the mechanics of a swap rather than why and how and who was behind the scenes building this structure. And in fact, nobody has ever really talked about who is pulling the strings of this structure, and they don't teach that in any university, regardless of the quality, whether it be Wharton or, for in my case, business school at New York University or others. I mean, we're talking about schools rated second, third, fourth, or fifth in the world, and you don't learn this. Now, there's a reason why they don't tell you this stuff. Even as a trader in derivatives, they don't tell you this, Mohammed. What is the story behind that?
Well, even at London School of Economics, you won't find this subject discussed, or even in the City of London University. Ironically, a lot of people who work on the trading floors in the bank, say if you're on the swaps desk in a big bank, you'll just be given a limit, and you'll be told your limit is, I don't know, 20 billion or 5 billion or 100 million of capital, depending on the size of the bank. And all that trader knows as head of the swaps floor is what his limit of exposure is. He doesn't know how the bank arrived at that or the, you know, why the bank allocated him that amount. All of that is restricted to a very small number of people at the highest level who are managing the capital of the bank. It's the, they're above the accountants, they're above the traders. It's very, very, very privileged information. And in a lot of the public banks, even they're just implementing what's coming out of Basel. They're not the drivers behind it. They don't even understand how it works. Only a small group of people understand how it works, and those people, certainly from my experience in the City of London, you can't study it in any of the universities. They would reach a stage where they would be in a position, a trusted position within the bank. They would want them to get involved in managing the bank's capital. They would be then sent off to private courses at the BBA, the British Bankers Association. The British Bankers Association would have courses which they would teach to people, and books and availability of materials which are not available to anybody else, not even at the London School of Economics. And one of my favourite quotes about fractional reserve and money manipulation, the money manipulation dial, comes from Kenneth Galbraith. In his book Money, Whence It Came, Whence It Went, he said in the United States in the late 20s and 1930s, anybody who put forward in a PhD thesis that the real cause of the Depression was a shortage of purchasing power, i.e. a shortage of money, automatically had their PhD failed. That's what he said. If you put forward the real cause of the Depression, your PhD was failed.
So you learned early on in your studies that there were certain things that you didn't even touch, and that was one of them. And I'm going to give somebody, the average listener out there, who's going to try to make sense of this file, which I'm going to tell you, Mohammed, for the person on the street, this is going to be a stretch for them. But I hope every one of them can listen a couple of times to this, and I'll try to clarify it with other documentation if possible. You don't learn about money in high school. You don't learn about how to even manage a checkbook. This is not, they don't teach money to people. Now, for the importance of it, it's the lubricant of our lives. Sadly, we are tied to it as one would be to anything that helps you survive in this world. You're never given the inside knowledge necessary to manage your own affairs rationally. And that is by design. Money is something that they want to keep mysterious in both its creation and its use. And it's not just in the United States this is done. It's done here in France. In fact, did you know it's a taboo in France to discuss money with another person? And people actually get very nervous when you even bring up the subject of money. It happens in Britain as well. This is a worldwide phenomenon that has been foisted upon us by the people who don't want us to ever understand the system we're all living under. And the fact is now, today, because so few people do understand it, and because we're all facing it, instead of understanding something and knowing what to do going forward, they're standing there fearful because people fear what they don't understand. And so this is a perfect environment for them to do their dirty work. Fear gives way to irrational decision-making on the part of the people who need to have this information, and that's us, the public. Thomas Jefferson knew exactly the dangers of this. So did Andrew Jackson when he kept these bankers out of our lives. He knew the dangers of it. This man was versed and versatile in the fact that he could describe to those around him just what the dangers were of getting involved in these kind of fiat currencies and fractional holdings of money and creating money out of nothing, because he saw the raping of societies that had come before America. The Goldsmiths have done this before, and all we've got today is a more sophisticated system of robbery. And it's happening to us all, and we're all under its terrible consequence. Now, what are we to do about it, Mohammed? What do you believe we need to do going forward here? You've been part of solution-based thinking in Malaysia, but this makes Malaysia's problems look, again, like a day in the park compared to it.
Well, of course, that was just a single small economy trying to keep balance with the rest of the world. Here, what we've actually got is the meltdown of the major economies. I think the long term and the only real solution that's going to work is a complete overhaul, a restart on the way money is put into supply and the way that governments manage money and the way that financial institutions are allowed to operate.
Now, how about the Bromsgrove Group? What do you know about James Gibbs Stewart's group up there? He says gold is not the answer, and gold-backed currency is a mistake, and I agree with him. What we need is central governments responsible to the public writing enough money to lubricate commerce within its borders, but not to go out and do what's happened by these criminals at the top. What he recognized right away was that handing over our system to a gold-backed system would be returning us right to the same people who committed these crimes in the first place.
Well, that is partially true. There's also, you know, the other point, which is that it is the sovereign right of any national government to create its own currency. It's the sovereign right of government. It's the monetization. It's a representation of the monetary value of the people of the country. Therefore, it should be only in the hands of a representative government. I'm not going to say elected because of the dye bulb machine fiasco, which means that we've got an elected government in the United States that's most probably not even representative of the people. But a truly representative government of the people is allowed, it has the sovereign right to create its own money, and that should be taken off the Federal Reserve Bank, off the Bank of England, out of the hands of private banks, and placed fairly and squarely in full view, full transparent view. That means that anybody can go and look at the public books. You can't hide M3 from us like they're doing in the United States. It should be full on view accounting of what the government is doing, and that the people can at any time gain access to this information. You know, the Bank of England was covered by the Official Secrets Act in the UK, Darrell, up until, I think, as recently as the 1960s. And you weren't allowed to ask questions about it in the House of Commons. But did you completely free hand these people have had for centuries, and it's got to stop. It's got to come back to government, because at least if we're trying to do something and it doesn't work, I'm not saying I'm going to give you the perfect solution now, although I believe I probably could, but I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to say is that even if we went on a trial and error basis, as long as it was all open and in the public and we all saw people slipping and sliding and the stumbling and we tried this and that didn't work and we're going to twist this here and there, but we all had a say in it and it was all open and nobody was profiting from it, deliberately profiting, which is what they're doing at the moment. They're creating this money out of thin air and making 7% on everything that they create. And where's that all coming from? Ultimately, and this is what people have got to understand, who pays for this? Answer, the taxpayer. Who pays the interest on the government debt? The government. And where does the government get that money? Taxation. They have to tax us to get the money to pay the interest on the national debt. That's what taxation is covering, as well as all the other expenditure. The single biggest block of expenditure in the UK at the moment, I believe the mean average amount of on our debt is about 6% on 600 million. We have to find £40 billion a year out of tax just to pay the interest on our gilt market.
Yeah. And it's a factor of 10 or 15 times that in the United States.
If I had to pay that level of debt as a citizen in the United States, I'd stay in bed because I wouldn't be able to cope with the debt level.
It is something that I never thought as a young man or even as a middle-aged man that I would be facing these kind of problems now at this period of my life. I didn't expect this, but we are here. We're here now. And I guess what this requires of us is that we have to stand up and face it, and face it with a purpose. You know, this is what the French Connection has always been about, Mohammed, and you know it has. I'm sincere about my efforts here, and you are too. We have to face these things head on, not be afraid, not go into this shaking in our boots, but rather structure our decision making based on truth that we can glean out of our efforts to get to the truth. Now, I don't claim to know everything about this stuff, and I'm sure you don't either. What we are clear about is that what's happened to us is pretty clear, and what's coming is actually becoming clearer by the day. What we need to do about it is we need to get off of our hindquarters and actually take action. And action, by action, I mean tell others. The French Connection needs your help, Mohammed. I need help from people to get this message out. I want to give people a little pep here. We bought a server. We bought our dedicated server. It is a small one because the costs were incredible. The server space itself, the bandwidth itself wasn't terribly expensive. We had to pay all kinds of other fees just to get the bandwidth to work properly. Now, to get our story out and this message out on a stream to 500 people a day will cost us twice as much as we have right now. And that means that we need help from people who have the means. And there are people listening in this audience right now who have the means to help us, and we need the help. We need the money to go back into bandwidth so that we can get this message out. It needs to be followed up, Mohammed. What do you think? I mean, this is important stuff, man. This is the future of our planet.
Indeed, if we're going to have a future and we want to leave a legacy for the children, we don't want to be raising our children's children under the same debt slavery mechanism which these people have imposed upon us.
That's right. Well, in order to get the word out, I need more help. I mean, we've spent the money you sent, and we spent it wisely. We got the best we could find. We did the research. We did our due diligence. The book repository in all of its qualities has been a very good resource for us, and we have to thank them for the relationship. Now, that relationship has, and we've tapped out the whole system. We got nothing in there, and we need more bandwidth. We need more access to people. When we get out on the net in a few days, we're going to be streaming 24/7. We need to start increasing how many people can listen to this message. And I want to tell everybody, we're going to start a network exclusively dedicated to Ben Friedman and others who have told these truths. And anytime anybody clicks on it, they're going to hear these facts in their face. And this is just the beginning for the truth. I hope everybody can follow up and give us the help we need. What do you say to that, Mohammed?
Well, I'm looking forward to you expanding technologically. And as a result, being able to get a greater reach and a bigger audience. I think you were saying now that when you add up the total downloads on the files, we're in the numbers of 40,000 plus now. We've come a very, very, very long way on some of the bigger downloads there, and it shows that we have an increasing demand for what you're putting out.
Of course, I worry about myself. I worry about what they're willing to do to me. I need everybody to stand up and stand shoulder to shoulder with me on these battles, you know, and stop listening to the lying pundits out there who say that what we're doing is nonsense. This is absolutely the best game in town, and I need your help, and so do you. Mohammed, I want to thank you for coming on the French Connection today. This is going to need clarification. I don't know even where to start with that. But I urge anybody who listens to this, if they haven't listened to the last file first, please do that. Because rather than clarify, we actually heaped a bunch of stuff on top of people with this one, Mohammed. Even I had to scratch my head a few times sitting here. This is a big story, and it's so complex that most people can't actually spend the time to know it. It is a knowable thing. We can figure it out. It has been figured out for you here. Spend the time to understand it so that you can go forward with the right knowledge. And we may do some clarifying later. In fact, we have an Alex Jones lie that he sent me. Alex Jones, or somebody with a name Alex from PrisonPlanet.com website, email address, sent me a man named Werner Schombert as an economist. And we're going to talk about Werner, aren't we, there, Mohammed?
Yeah,
Not today, but...
We read that on behalf of Alex Jones. Even if it wasn't from him, we took it as if it was in the spirit from him.
and boy, you want to see an apologist for criminal Zionist bankers. This is the one. And we're going to discuss that criminality and what it all means. Anyway, until the next time. Take care of your families. Prepare yourselves for whatever eventuality you believe is on its way. Be kind to everybody around you, please, and be well. Until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you. Goodbye now.
Hold me close and hold me fast. The magic spell you cast. This is Love Beyond Rose. When you kiss me, heaven sighs, And though I close my eyes, I see lavender and rose. When you press me to your heart, and in a world apart, a world where roses bloom. And when you speak, angels sing from above. Everyday words seems to turn into love song. Give your heart and soul to me, and life will always bleed. La vie en rose.